1, 2, 3. Hey, everybody. Welcome to My Worst Date. I'm Cassie.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Christina.
You know what's been happening a lot more lately? And Cassie, you're not here to experience this, but it is really riding on my last California nerve. And that is that it will not stop fucking raining.
At all.
Yeah. I think that qualifies you actually for a major discount in rent, right?
I agree.
That's what we pay for.
I absolutely agree. Like my rent went up this year and I'm like, excuse the fuck out of me.
You're like, actually?
I didn't sign up for this at all.
No.
Where are the amenities?
Yeah.
The amenities. Are they in the room with us right now?
Jesus. Lord. I mean, but it really has shown me because sometimes... Like this morning, I love the day list that Spotify creates, you know, like Spotify will create like a day list for you, like to help you like vibe out throughout your day. And mine this morning was like a 2000s millennial morning. And so it was a lot of like Decemberists and like Postal Service and Belle and Sebastian. And I get it in my head sometimes when I'm listening to music like that, that I'm like, I could live in Portland. I could live in... I could live in Boulder, Colorado. No.
And then you looked outside and you're like, fuck this rain.
Honestly, like truly. And like my mood would be so poor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I lived somewhere that didn't have sunshine.
I'm like the total opposite. So I just got back from London, as you guys know.
Another cloudy city.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, it's lovely. It's so rainy.
Oh,
I'm so ridiculous.
Disgusting.
I woke up in the morning, one morning it was raining on the window and I just opened all my curtains. I'm like, oh, look, it's beautiful. I love it.
Oh my Lord.
I'm such a nerd.
No. I know. I like
Who
it
likes,
for sleeping.
Nobody likes rain as much as me.
I like it for sleeping. That's about it. You know?
It's lovely. Mm-hmm. I love the sound of it. Just, it's, I don't know. There's a cozy vibe to, I don't, yeah. I don't know. I've yet to get sick of it.
Why you live in Los Angeles, I'll never understand. It's like you love the rain and hate the beach.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing
it
here?
It is true. It is true. It is weird. But I don't know. I love LA.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I don't know. LA's home for me in so many ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do hate the beach. But really, it's, yeah. We've talked about this before. I hate sand in my ass, mostly.
Well, who likes that? Is that someone's kink?
Probably.
I really feel like there's, I mean, anybody who likes the beach must like that. That's in my main mind. That's people
or
who
it's
like
just
the
not
beach.
A deal breaker. We'll say that.
Yes. Okay. And here's the thing. I enjoy, it's just once I'm there, I'm fine. Right. It's, I think if I lived by the beach, I'd be fine. But I think it's just like that LA thing where like anything that's not close to you is a bit of a hassle. And so then like the beach feels like a extra bit of hassle because then you got to like pack chairs and things and this and that. And it's a lot of stuff for me to go sit with sand in my asshole. So it's just the effort
fair.
That it's required.
That's, you know what? That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that's what I'm saying. I'm not asking you to agree with you. I just want you to be. Just know where I'm coming from.
Exactly. No, we got it for sure.
Yeah. I did get Chris a gift while we were there. I got him this little Paddington bear.
So cute. Adorable. I love Paddington.
Chris loves Paddington. And so I got him this cute little Paddington bear that he can like put on his keychain, but we have to hide it from Rose because she also thinks that Paddington is hers. Because she's like, oh,
I want
Stuffy.
To kill it.
I need to kill that. Let me kill Stuffy, the Stuffy thing. Yeah. She's like, that needs all the insides on the outsides. So I didn't think about that very well. So now we have to like hide it up high.
So I sent something to you guys yesterday. This is taking a hard left turn, but it lives in my brain. I took a screenshot of it. And so like anytime I open my pictures, I see it. And that is, we need to talk about the Cyruses. I don't know what the fuck is going on over there, but we already knew because there was this big hullabaloo about Miley Cyrus not thanking Billy Ray Cyrus when she won her first Grammy. I think it was her first Grammy. Here recently.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, well, they're not talking because he divorced her mom to marry her like childhood best friend. or something.
Wait, what? I didn't her know name,
there's
that.
Too much. I feel like this is a full length episode
her
conversation.
Her name is like Starfire, this girl that he married.
Okay.
That Billy Ray Cyrus married. And she's like,
and it was a childhood friend of
Miley Cyrus, which is, I'd be upset with my dad too. Right. Okay. So you're like,
I don't like that.
Weird shit's happening over there. Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Understood. But she's still close with her mom. What I didn't realize is that her mom recently got remarried, and her mom got remarried to an actor who had previously dated her younger daughter, Noah Cyrus. Can you imagine
that
because, so much?
Because Noah's young.
Yeah, she's fairly young. In her 20s. Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Right. She's young. She's 20s,
Miley,
right?
Yeah. Miley is in her early 30s. So Noah has to be in her 20s.
She's a baby in my mind. She's a baby. I'm just like, what is the age gap?
It's like a 30-year age difference. It's a very significant age difference. But beyond that, because like you see that all the time, like really significant age differences, like Gigi Hadid
between
dating,
whom and who
is dating Bradley Cooper. You know, like there's big significant age differences all over Hollywood. The issue for me, which is always kind of like, we've talked about that before,
right?
But the main issue for me is like, I wouldn't want to sleep with somebody who slept with one of my siblings.
No,
let alone sleep with someone who slept with one of my children. Why would you marry someone?
No.
What's happening? Mm-mm.
No. See, here's the other thing, though. I'm not talking about the age difference between the two grown adults here. I'm talking about the age difference between this guy and Noah.
No,
and,
I know.
When did that happen?
I know. Well, I think there's recently. She's an adult, so, and it did happen when she was an adult. Yeah.
I understand that. But there's a major age gap between her and her mom. So like, where does he live within this age gap?
He's 30 years older than Noah-ish, from what I read, and a couple of years younger than the mom. So he's like,
see, that's what I
yeah, only a couple of years. He's like, I don't know, 5 years or less younger than her.
That's so grody.
I hate all of it so much.
Yeah,
I hate that. They dated.
Yeah.
And then I hate that the mom was like, oh, not only am I so cool that you guys are dating, I'm such a cool mom that now I'm going to marry him. I don't.
There's a transference there that I can't get out of my brain.
No.
And I'm just like, are the Cyruses all right? Like, are you guys okay?
No.
What is happening over there?
No, you that's why I mean? There's not a show called Keeping Up with the Cyruses.
Lord,
okay?
Drama. Drama,
which
drama,
is the
drama.
Name of our next episode.
messy. Cyruses.
Yeah, there's a definite list I think I have of like people that become off limits.
Yeah.
Once they, you know, are you interested or dating a family member?
Yeah.
A good friend, an acquaintance, a work colleague. Well, I mean, it really, I'm like,
how do you ever get it out of your
head?
Well,
what's the barriers?
Like, how do you ever get it out of your head that this person was attracted to this other person in my life? You know what I mean? Like, if it's a sister, if it's and child goes beyond anything else. Like, you are dating a man, married to a man who was physically attracted to your child.
Very young.
No. Right? It blew me away. Like, I don't know that I could ever be okay. And I don't think she is okay with it, or at least she didn't go to the wedding. So.
And, it's so weird.
Yes.
I just don't.
It lives in my brain rent free. I think about it ever since I saw it and sent it to you guys. It's been popping in my brain.
My question is, would you. Okay. Take parents out of it, because we know that's fucking off the table and fully disgusting. I don't think I could date someone who dated one of my siblings.
Exactly.
Right.
Right.
Right. I know that you said that. Like, but like, really think about it. Like, they were seeing each other. I just kind of reread like the thing, and it's like in quote seeing each other. So maybe it wasn't like a serious thing. Would that matter to you?
Did they have sex?
Yeah, see,
because then just, immediate no. No. Immediate no. Immediate no.
I think even before that, I think the idea that they were with the sibling first
Yeah.
And then I'm like, what am I, a consolation prize? Or like, what? Like, I would always feel like,
yeah.
Well, second. We've all seen The Family Stone. So,
oh God. Maybe it- I mean,
so it can happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, switcheroo. Yeah.
Sometimes if it works, it works. But I just couldn't, like, I wouldn't ever be able to sleep with that person without thinking about them sleeping with X person,
right?
X other person. It, yeah. You know, like, no way.
No. Yeah, it's too close,
it's so
to home.
Gross.
Yeah. And there's,
yeah.
Look, the planet is overpopulated. There are so
We're
many
plenty.
People. There are so many people for you to fucking marry. You do not
don't
need
have to
pull from this someone who's slept with someone you're related to.
Unnecessary.
Like, no.
Someone you're related to, or someone that you're, you know, your child played in the sandbox with.
Yeah, like
there
what
are other
you?
People.
A fucking tutor? A Windsor? No.
What's happening?
Stop it.
Okay. All right. Other side. Uh-huh. Would you date a brother of someone that you dated?
No.
Like, you're dating Liam Hemsworth. Chris
and Chris was interested.
Better fit. Yeah.
I don't think
okay,
so.
Okay, now you're hurting me. And I hate you for this, because now I'm like, well,
don't put her in this
the heart wants, right? Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the better brother. He's the better brother. Let's be
yeah,
real.
Exactly.
I mean,
I love that you picked Liam knowing that he was married to Miley, because.
Oh. Well, I didn't, like, necessarily go down that track like on purpose, just knowing that I wanted to end with Chris.
Yeah. Just, yeah. I mean, you know. I don't think I could. I know it would be like, look, the heart does what it wants. And if you don't know, you don't know. Like, maybe you,
right?
you go to, it's a
like,
family stone situation. Mm-hmm. And you
what
met
if you're
him
dating
for the first
Owen
time.
Wilson, and then Luke Wilson comes
right.
along
okay.
and you're like, wow.
Oh, right now.
Christina's
going
to throw hands
stop
about this,
it.
I think.
Because, yeah, I would. Okay. I'm going to be honest with myself. If I was dating Luke or Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
And I was like, fully, like, we've been dating seriously. He brings
and
me
and
home.
It's been, and it's been good.
And it's
but
been
it's
good.
Been great.
It's been good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we
and
get
then you
home,
meet Luke.
And
you're
then
like,
meet Luke, and he's wearing like gray sweatpants like he was in the
Fuck
Family
you.
Stone. I mean, come on.
Fuck you.
I mean,
gray sweatpants? You're going to bring gray sweatpants into this? However dare you.
I am breaking a few hearts. I'm just saying. I am breaking
I love
hearts.
How quickly we went from being very strongly against to like, well, maybe. Listen, let's not be too hasty.
Listen. Well,
the
all
heart
right.
wants what the heart wants.
The heart wants.
Right?
Exactly.
Oh, oh my God. Gosh. So I was thinking about this recently as well, because it's Women's History Month. And I was thinking for Fuck, Marry, Kill. Mm-hmm. Maybe we give the ladies some love.
Mm. Yeah.
Always yeah. down for that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's do historical women.
Ooh, okay.
for Women's
oh, God, Lord.
Month.
Ma'am.
Historical
I
women.
I feel like this Ooh, could get one. Messy real fast. Okay. Go ahead.
Josephine Baker.
Okay.
Come
okay.
to Europe now. Celebrated, you know.
Okay.
Celebrated. Okay. In Paris, of course, but
RBG, that's mine.
Okay.
Oh God.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. We have Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yep.
Yes.
And,
Josephine Baker.
Yep.
Okay. Lord, this is. You know what?
She's going to throw in a Frida Kahlo. I know it.
No, I wasn't going to throw in a Frida Kahlo. Because I'm thinking about this, right? And I'm weighing my options out here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with, we're going to go a little bit more modern. We're going to go with Jane Fonda.
Oh,
nice.
We're going to go with a Jane
okay.
Fonda. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Activist still
I don't,
has been
I'm
an activist since the
all.
60s. You know, I love a.
I like this.
Queen.
I dig this for us.
Mm-hmm.
This is hard.
It's three very different
yeah.
women, you know, very different
yes.
kind of types of women. Well, I mean, actually kind of like Josephine Baker and Jane Fonda to me kind of put off similar vibes, similar
yeah.
kind of energy. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has a different vibe. I think she's a Pisces, speaking of Pisces season, pretty sure.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah. So... Yeah, wow.
Josephine Baker, though, she was a spy, and I think mm-hmm, that's really mm-hmm. cool.
Yep, yep, yep.
And then, I mean, like, adopted a bunch of, like, children.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I don't know. All these women are so amazing.
Yeah.
It's I'm tough. Not going to lie. There is a part of me that's like, do I want to deal with all those children?
I know what I'm going to do. I know what I'm going to do. Yeah, exactly. Okay. That is where my head went. And also being a spy should probably like gone a lot. And so then am I
dealing with these kids, all them kids,
all them kids.
I mean, surely you're hiring someone, right? Like hopefully. You got to have a nanny. I would think
at least. Yeah.
And I don't think that was until after she was done with her spy work. It was after the war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to marry RBG.
Mm-hmm. Solid.
Okay.
We are. I like this for you. Intellectually fulfilling, incredibly calm, peaceful life. She seems like very still waters.
She might make you wake up in the morning and do push-ups and lift two weight dumbbells. But
that's good for me. I need somebody a little bit, you know, like
hold you accountable,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And then I'm fucking Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
All right.
Jane Fonda fucks.
Oh God, yeah.
She fucks.
That woman has stamina. I've seen those Jane Fonda workout tapes. All right.
Like, that's right.
That woman
and her prime, please.
Can go and go and go. To be honest, I was listening to some podcast that had Jamie Loftus on it, who's a podcaster comedian, and she was saying how she was doing the Jane Fonda workout tapes, and it started out as like a bit. Like she was like, oh, this will be funny. And she's like, I got in the best shape of my life. And I'm like, I bet if you could get your hands on those tapes.
I bet it works. Real workouts. You see her body's banging.
Mm-hmm. Incredible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love that.
I feel good about that.
I feel strongly about this for you, Christina. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm going to do too. Okay. I'm actually going to fuck Josephine Baker because.
Also hot.
Fucking stunning. Are you kidding?
And like, remained stunning gorgeous. Forever.
Forever. Like beautiful. Plus she lives in Paris.
She speaks several languages.
We're gonna have the best time. Mm-hmm. And then I'm gonna marry Jane Fonda.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
I dig her. She's got like this kind of quiet punk rock attitude, a very don't tell me what to do vibe, which you know I love. And just won't put up with shit. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. I am concerned that she might be a fire sign.
Dude, any woman that had to be alive and exist when we couldn't hold property or credit cards and shit like that.
All three of these women existed at that time.
Yeah. Massive respect.
Jane
to come
Fonda.
Out and be like as successful as they are and going against the system and their bravery, like all of them, mad respect.
100%.
Oh my God. Absolutely.
Jane Fonda is a, she's right on the cusp. She's December 21st. That's either a Capricorn or a Sagittarius.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Cause it's right there on the line. I'm not sure.
I'm not mad about that.
Me neither.
I like that. I'm happy with my decision.
And then Josephine Baker is June 3rd. June 3rd is a Gemini.
Or
Gemini, June. Yeah.
Yeah, Gemini.
And then I'm pretty sure that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a Pisces, but let me...
I think you're right.
Because I have a shirt that has Pisces people on it, and I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg is on it. March 15th. Oh, her birthday's coming up.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I think I am going to marry Josephine Baker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think I'm going to marry her. I feel like, yes, she's got all them kids, but her heart is in the right place with adopting.
And she's got all that money.
I think she's got plenty of support. So I think that we can make it work together. I think we can manage those kids. And again, we get to live in Europe. She has this kind of attitude. Like, I don't know. I admire people who have that kind of attitude who are like, well, why wouldn't I? Like, why wouldn't I be successful? Cause like she was at a time, she was successful at a time whenever she faced like so many barriers to her success and her self-confidence was always like, well, of course. And if they don't appreciate me here, well, fuck you. I'll go to Paris, you know, like, and I love that about her. So I feel like she will encourage me to do great things. She's going to get me out of the house. Yeah. I love it. I am going to fuck Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
I think we'll have a real good time. I feel like Jane Fonda would mesmerize me with stories. I feel like we'd have a great date.
Yeah.
I feel like a nice evening. Yeah. You'd have nice a really evening. Nice evening. There'd be good wine involved. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It would be a delight.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like where she is now, it would be one of those things where she just kind of like you're enjoying the evening. You've had a lot of wine and she just kind of gently puts her hand on your arm and is just like, would you like to take this upstairs? And you're like, okay.
Spicy.
Oh, do I?
Okay.
Jane.
I'm into it. I'm down. Yeah. So, yeah. Right. Yeah. And then of course I love RBG, but.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm a friend.
There's a friend. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I was gonna say this is an FMF for mm-hmm. sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Hey, we do have a new patron.
Yes.
We want to say a big shout out to Jenny Simmons. Welcome,
Hi.
Welcome. Thanks so much for joining Patreon. We will have a movie for you very soon. Mm-hmm. What are we watching again?
Oh, we're watching A Walk month. To Remember.
A Walk to Remember.
Right, because I haven't
your
seen
choice.
It.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Christina,
yes.
It's your choice.
A Walk to Remember. I have a
Mandy
feeling
Moore.
We're going to have a lot to say.
I am very excited.
Listen, it is a teen couple that gets married. So,
ooh, well, ooh.
Already it's like, oh, I've got thoughts.
Awesome. Well, you guys,
we're going to have a talk to remember. That's what's going to happen.
There we go. A talk to remember.
All right. Well, you guys want to take five and then we'll come back with stories.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Cool.
And we're back.
Okay. I am going to kick us off. I've got a fire listener submission.
Fantastic.
Titled My Shame Receipt.
Oh, love it already.
Dash 99 apple flavored problems.
What?
So.
What?
But a bitch ain't one.
Exactly. Okay. So she says, this story takes place when I was a sophomore in college. I'd spent all of freshman year being the DD since I came from a conservative environment and figuring out who I was.
Mm-hmm. Hi. It's me.
I had little to no real drinking experience myself, only to find out that most people have been drinking in high school. Insert Miley Cyrus party in the USA lyric. Guess I never got the memo. I identify as an extrovert. I normally absolutely love being around people, whether we are doing the most or nothing at all. But as an extrovert, it's hard for me to realize even we need to recharge alone every now and again.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Let this be a lesson. Extroverts, if it is no longer people time, don't force people time.
If I force people time, I'm going to be crying soon.
Yeah.
Like I've definitely same. Done that before where I've gone too hard for too long. And then I'm like, why am I crying in the corner for no reason? I'm like, oh, I haven't recharged my batteries in like 3 days.
Exactly.
It was February of 2017. The homecoming basketball game always had a follow-up party amongst my friend group. While I wanted to go, I also kind of didn't want to go at all. I know now that means
relatable.
My social battery was in the yellow. Yes.
I love the way that she put that. Your social battery is in the yellow. And that is absolutely right. Yep. Whenever you're kind of like on the fence where you're
low
like,
on gas.
It sounds like fun, but also, ugh, I really don't want to go. It's like that is
the gas lights on.
Mm-hmm, it's starting to blink a warning at you.
But
that's
you're,
like,
you're
hey.
Extrovert. So that FOMO feeling, you know?
Yes.
Just like,
oh, so strong.
Yeah.
Especially at that age. And you're talking like a homecoming thing. Where everybody's going to be there.
Everybody's going to be there.
Everybody's going to be there.
You're
going to
miss.
Not?
You're going to miss everything.
Yeah.
Everything's going to happen that
All
night.
The best things.
Exactly. So naturally, having drank a single hand count's worth of times before this, when one of the older people in the friend group was doing their liquor store run, I requested a bottle of 99 apples. I don't even know what this
is. I don't know what that is.
It
sounds like a mistake.
The hangover from hell.
You keep going. I'm going to look it up. You know what it sounds like?
That sounds like a mistake.
It sounds like Boone's Farm.
It sounds like Apple Schnapps, which is just like if you've ever had.
Do you know what would happen if I got drunk on fucking Schnapps right now? I'd be dead for like a week and a half.
Yeah, the only thing I think about when I think about Schnapps is how like syrupy it is.
Oh, yeah.
Like it is like syrup. It is so like thick and
yeah. So if you or any of those listening are blissfully unfamiliar with the liquor brand 99.
Oh, I've had these. I've had these. It's basically vodka. But I mean, look at it. Look at it. It looks like a mistake. Like the bottle looks like a mistake. It's like vodka flavored whatever. So it's like 99 apples and then.
Like a Smirnoff type thing, huh?
Kind of, but it is. It's just vodka.
It's liquor, yeah. But she says, imagine if you melted down a whole bag of green apple Jolly Ranchers, boiled it down to its purest essence, Willy Wonka style, and then left it in a dark corner to collect negative energy and bad vibes and ferment for a year. You'd be in the ballpark.
Yeah.
I 100%.
I tasted that.
That is a college... beverage right there.
Yep.
I've definitely
tasted that.
As an adult, I have had not the apples one, but I have had the peach one because they have them up at the at some liquor stores, at least in Springfield when I'm in Missouri, at liquor stores, they'll have like a basket of like the little airplane bottles of 99 whatever. So like peach, apple. So like you can just be like, I'll just throw a couple of these on top.
Yep. Nope.
Because they're cheap.
And the basket's labeled bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like hangover fuel.
I really don't want to go out jitters came over me before the game, so I think it'll be a good idea to calm them. I'll pour myself a big gulp mug with the following contents.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh, no.
3 shots of 99 apples and fill the rest of it with a mix of apple juice and apple-flavored sweet and sour mix.
Oh.
I'm
gonna throw up in my
apple mouth. Flavored sweet and sour mix is not a thing I knew existed. That
gross
sounds so bad.
Honey, oh my god.
There's so much sugar.
Do you remember your baby drinks though? When you were a baby drinker? Yeah. We all drank shit like
I used
this
to put
we
amaretto
drinkers.
In Dr. Pepper, which is just like
oh my god. God. Dude, I know Cassie and I are old enough for the Jolly Ranchers and Zima.
Oh,
Lord. Obviously.
Yeah.
And I don't, her hashtag never gurts.
No regurts. Oh,
regurgitation.
My God.
Oh. Ugh.
And I just sip on that abomination for an hour before the game.
It couldn't have tasted good. Right?
Midway into that concoction, I think to myself, I know I'm going to be drinking. What do people say about drinking on an empty stomach? They say don't. So I think a peanut butter and jelly sandwich is the perfect pairing to my fine, luxurious liquor choice of the evening.
Wow.
So I walk to the basketball game on campus, have a good time. We win. Yay. Social battery is now in the red. Mm-hmm. PB&J is pondering revolutionary texts inside my stomach. But it's noncommittal.
Oh, no.
Again, an extrovert would rather die than experience FOMO. And I wasn't used to having a dead social battery, so I didn't know what my body needed.
She's pushing through. Yeah. Oh, honey. What your body needs is a Crunchwrap Supreme. Like, your body needs...
Absolutely.
Like, that will help. That will do
Put
wonders.
On Love is Blind. Postmates yourself some T-Bell.
Yes.
Getting your JJs.
Night. You made You're it fine. To the game.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
That's it. That's it. Cut to, my roommate and I are waiting for the Uber to take us to the house party. I take a shot. 10 minutes go by. I say, how far away is the Uber? She says, 5 minutes. I take another shot. Uber's here. One more shot for the road.
Wait. A shot. When she says a shot, she's saying a shot of 99 apples.
I believe so. Yeah.
She's
so three.
How many shots of 99 apples has she had?
By my
this will
count,
be six.
Six. Yeah. Yeah.
That's too many.
Yeah. That's too many.
Oh no.
Get to party, feeling good. Great, actually. Spoiler alert, it was short-lived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. This tradition was near and dear to my heart throughout the remainder of my time at college, so much so that I learned how to drink responsibly. I started to lead the charge, and my friends even pulled it out at my wedding. The tradition is to get a 4-liter of Carlo Rossi red wine and gather cultishly in a circle and begin to chant, sing, "The cops are coming, so hide your wing weed tonight, tonight. The cops are coming, so hide your weed tonight."
Look, Carlo Rossi, man. Like, there's a time and place.
Carlo Rossi.
A jug. Anything that comes in a jug.
I don't know. I have had Franzia. My last experience with Franzia was we did a wine in box party to celebrate Y2K. Mm-hmm. And we called it WIB Y2K.
It's been that long since you've had Franzia?
Yeah.
Oh, it has.
Wow.
I
had enough.
Mine's
for
been sooner.
The rest of my
Mine
life
has been more recent than that, for sure.
You know why they put? That wine in a jug, right?
Why?
So when you're done chugging it, you have something to play.
Oh my God!
Self-made instrument.
The longer the pool, the more cheers from the group. General college party binge drinking behavior. Obviously before the pandemic.
Listen, clearly, you don't binge drink Carlo Rossi. Like, that is the thing. Like, you got to be responsible.
You're mixing. Now you're mixing.
And this girl is saying, don't tell me what to do.
Yeah,
I'll binge drink whatever I want to binge drink.
It's very college behavior.
Yes.
But I'm trying to save you. I'm over here trying to be a good big sister to you. Like, Carlo Rossi, time and place. But like, you drink more. It is so sweet that it's like, if you drink more than, I want to say, 3 glasses.
Oh my God. The sugar in it alone. Hangover the next day was going to be fucking brutality.
Brutal.
So she takes 3 big gulps of this wine, dancing, having a good ass time. Eventually, I find my roommate leaned up against a wall, so I go to talk to her. She didn't go to parties very often, so she was nervous, and I wanted to make sure she was having a good time. I asked how she was, and she said, "Good, I'm glad I came out. I don't know why I don't go out more." Then she said, "How are you doing?" I said, "I'm so fucking good, man." And gave her a fist bump.
Uh-oh.
She laughed.
Oh, no.
She laughed,
you know,
and said,
when you are the sober friend and your friends start talking like that, you're like, oh, fuck.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Emergency.
She laughed and said,
so fucking good, man.
Are you sure?
Yep, you're not good.
And I
sure
said,
you're not going to be good.
Totally.
In about 10 minutes.
She said, because you're on the ground.
I feel like I've been there. Like, you're standing one minute and the next minute you are not.
I said, Duke, what are you talking about?
Sure.
No, I'm not. I'm standing here talking to you on this wall. And she said, look to your left and raise your arm. Sure as shit, I was flat on my back.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Wow.
You slid down the wall like a slug while asking me how I was doing. Like, your legs didn't want a leg anymore. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh, sweetie.
And that was the end. My legs continued not to leg. And it wasn't pretty. I had to be dragged out of the house by 2 boys and my friend Laura the next car home. My friend Laura did a lot for me that night. I won't embarrass her by sharing how much, but just know everyone needs a Laura in their life. Shout out to her.
That's right.
But probably the funniest thing she did was help me stay alive once we made it back to my dorm apartment. I talked a lot about how I was super afraid of vomiting in my sleep and choking to death. Mm-hmm. This was such a fear. Laura knew I was serious about it, so to prevent that, she took the only object she could readily find in my dorm apartment while she was also drunk and duct taped them to my bare skin. The thought process being that while I was sleeping, if I felt like rolling onto my back, I would be too uncomfortable. That's how they love me. I woke up at 6:30 the next morning. Everyone's asleep. I need to throw up. I should throw up. I sit up. So full of hangover regret and deep scan my room. I hear crinkling and feel my skin on my back pull weird.
Oh, no.
I proceed to pull a rubber duck and a full unopened can of Sprite off my back, along with a copiously long stripe of duct tape.
You know what? Kind of brilliant drunk logic, to be honest. Listen. Like, if your brain's working at 50% capacity, that's doing pretty well.
That's
I'd love
awesome,
to see it at 100,
man.
You know?
Oh, my God.
I have to say, like, one PB&J... Not enough. It just wasn't enough.
Not enough to soak that up.
You put too much on that PB&J. It could not stand up to Carlo
exactly.
Rossi and 99 apples.
I don't know much that could actually stand up to that combo.
I have to say, like, her legs, like, refusing to work is a testament to whatever they put in Carlo Rossi and 99 apples. Those are such cheap liquors that I don't want to see the factory where those are manufactured.
Seriously.
Who knows? Let's not put that under the microscope, because it's
let's not examine it too closely. Okay.
Because you're on the ground.
My God. Because you're on the ground.
Legs stop working.
Dazed and beyond confused, a wave of nausea hits me, accompanied by a hot flash that I imagine will rival menopause.
Oh, Lord.
It was also February, one of the coldest months. I check the weather. It's exactly 30 degrees outside. Into my hungover ass, that sounds like the best thing ever.
Oh, no.
So in a sports bra and boy shorts, I open the door, which open like a breezeway walkway with other doors, like a Motel 8, and step outside. Hair unbrushed. Basically naked, rash-like stripe and rubber duck shape on my back.
Oh, God.
I just proceeded to rotate slowly in the cold, arms out, legs slightly bowed like a reverse rotisserie chicken.
Babe, this is the kind of hangover that I do not miss.
This is, I can't do this anymore. Do you know, honestly, it would
too old for this shit.
Wreck me. Holy crap. It was so jarring, but it did fix the nausea. I rotate like that in midwinter morning silence, essentially in my underwear, questioning everything, when the door across from me opens. I lock eyes with a girl I don't know who's clearly on her way to work. She looks me up and down. Hey. I do a half hand raise. Hey. No other words were exchanged.
Mm-hmm. They
I went
needed.
Back inside and shut the door.
No other words were needed in that moment. You understood each other.
Yes.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That took me back so hard.
Wow.
Thank you so much for writing in. And she says she tells everybody about the podcast. I specifically tell them to listen to the episodes containing the Hee-Haw Gang, the Porch Jerker, and the Socks and Shit Lady. It gets them every time. So thank you.
God.
I was like, Hee-Haw Gang. Oh, yeah. I think that was a Tainted Love.
It was. Oh. Yeah. Where there was like a murder for hire plot and they told everybody in town.
Oh, my God. That's
I remember.
Right.
Wow.
Oh, my God. That's
incredible.
Right. That
incredible.
Is fucking insane.
Oh, my God. That took me back, man. Dude, your first time getting like completely...
Yeah.
Shobliterated.
And you don't know that it can happen. Because I'm with her. Like, I didn't drink for a while. Like,
same.
I was college age whenever I was really starting to drink. And the first few times I drank, didn't get drunk. I got drunk, but I didn't get hungover. So I was like, oh, I'm invincible. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then you go just way
I'm
too ham
this.
One time. And you always go, for me, whenever I had my first bad hangover, and I think I've said it on the show before, it was because I had like... 3 Smirnoff Ices and 3 Mike's Hard Lemonades in like under an hour.
Ooh,
God.
And then after that, your judgment is so impaired that you're like, put the peach schnapps in the...
Oh, God.
You know, in the... I think I put peach schnapps in Dr. Pepper, I think is what happened after that.
I can't drink sugary stuff anymore. That's what
I can't either.
That's what will give me the hangover is if I have super
peach
sugary
stops.
Stuff.
Midori, all that. Ugh.
A schnapps, period. Avoid
truly.
That.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know,
I'm in Germany. I don't think I can avoid it anymore.
But they got, surely there's high quality schnapps that exists, right?
I would imagine.
I've never been
I don't know.
Exposed to it. I've only been exposed to schnapps in a plastic bottle.
Ooh.
But
same. I'll keep you posted.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. When I was 25, I met this guy on Tinder. For the first couple of weeks of dating, we only spent time at my house or going out, never his. When I questioned why we couldn't go to his place, he said he'd been living with a friend because his new place was still being renovated.
Okay.
His friend's his wife.
Yeah, no, exactly. I was just going to say, you beat me to the punch. Ever since this whole like Risa Tisa 50 part thing, I was just like, the lies.
I have been binging Who the Bleep Did I Marry? Because that's actually what it's called, which makes me feel like an eighth grader. Yeah. But on it's on Max.
Oh,
right now. Yeah. And so I've just been watching that show. And so same. I'm just like, red flag, red flag. His place is being renovated. No, it ain't.
No,
no it ain't.
You don't have a place. You live with your wife. The lies. There's a
lies. Million. Okay. I thought that was kind of suspect, but he was super hot.
There we go.
Communicative and kind. And I was young, so I overlooked it. Who among us?
Yeah.
The more we got to know each other, the more he started staying over at my place. And within 2 months, he was basically living with me.
At 2 months, your place renovated yet?
Yeah, literally.
2 months?
I'm like, did they completely demolish it and they're rebuilding it from the ground up? Because you can't stay there. I've known plenty of people who have had their place renovated. And there's usually like areas that you can still be in.
Yeah.
You know? Okay.
And what happened to your friend that you were staying with?
Right? Legit. One night, while he was at work, an email notification popped up on his laptop. Upon further inspection, I realized he had a profile on a sugar baby website, which he'd been sending messages from as recently as the day before.
Goodbye. All your stuff. Locks are changed.
Tell me everything. Mm-hmm.
I was shocked. I broke up with him and kicked him out, but it ended badly and I never got my key back. 2 months later, he reached out while I was out of town visiting family, apologized for everything, and asked for a second chance. We discussed getting together to talk when I returned at the end of the week. I ended up deciding to come back a day early. On the day I headed back, everything seemed fine until I told him about my change in plans, and he immediately stopped responding. It seemed weird and I was upset, but shrugged it off, figuring I'd hear back by the next day. When I finally made it to my place, I walked in to find my trash overflowing, a sink full of dishes. My bed had clearly been slept in and there were clothes that were not mine everywhere.
What?
I was obviously freaked out and went to my neighbors to see if they'd noticed anyone coming or going. They told me they'd talked to Tony as he was letting himself into my place almost a week prior. He told them he was watching my dog for me while I was out of town, which was impossible because my dog had come with me. Turns out he'd seen that I was out of town on social media and had been squatting in my apartment the entire week I'd been gone. He faked wanting to get back together only to find out when I'd be home. The next day, I changed the locks, threw his stuff in the hallway, and texted him that I knew what he'd done and to come pick it up. He never came to get it and even had the audacity to be pissed at me for removing his things from my apartment. We never spoke again.
You're lucky I didn't set them on fire.
You're lucky I didn't call the police.
Truly.
No shit.
Like, truly. I mean, that is a lesson to be learned. That's another young person thing. Like, I would have probably shrugged it off too, but like, if this man has your key still and you can't get it back from him, you got to change the locks. I know it's inconvenient,
but
you got to do it.
Yeah. You got to do it.
I don't want to come home to a surprise squatter.
Mm-mm.
Exactly. Yeah. No, no, thank you. It's actually not that difficult to change your locks either. Like to change like the doorknob and the.
But everything when you're young is difficult. Like I got to call who? Yeah. What? I'm so used to my mom making my doctor's appointments. You want me to figure out how to change the locks on my own? You're young, you know?
Yeah. I did see a TikTok with a girl who was talking to her parents. She must've been like 17 or something. And she's like, for a job or something, she's like, they keep asking me for a dob, and I like, what's a dob? And the dad was like, what?
Have we failed you?
If you're a parent and you get that, you're like, where have we gone wrong?
Right?
What have I done?
Exactly.
What have we done for my dob?
Well, it also goes to show that like our education system,
that's really, exactly right.
It focuses on the wrong things. I'm like, oh, you have amen. Got to focus on these practical things yeah. that we are going to need to know as adults. Like we don't need to know, like there's so much that I feel like I learned in school that I don't use at all, but like you could have helped me figure looking out how to file my taxes, you know, yeah. like teach me practical shit.
Oh, yeah. Truly. I feel like I did learn that in school though. That's funny because I feel like,
well, they used I mean, to I feel have like we had home ec to fill out and shit like well, that.
Oh, I never took home ec, but I took they home had, ec. Well, like junior high I did, but like, I feel like you had to fill out like fake forms, like fake checks. You had to fill out fake,
I did fake
job
checks,
applications,
but barely anyone uses
resumes.
Checks anymore. And I don't feel like I did resumes. I don't feel like I did no. cover letters, like any of that no. stuff at all.
Huh. No.
And that is, and I hope schools
we
offer
did
that it.
English class.
I did yeah. have religion did that in English class.
What?
You guys didn't have religion oh. class?
Fuck no.
You went to a Catholic school.
Yes, I
right?
did.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
I
yeah, did. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So
they're like, you know what's not important? Women getting jobs. Amen.
I did get sent okay. home with one of those babies. Did you ever have that?
Yes.
Like,
yes,
did you
I
have the
baby,
baby.
Yeah.
that cried?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh well, that God. Leads perfectly into the story that I'm going to tell you right now.
okay.
Oh, okay.
A story that I got off of not Tinder, Reddit.
okay. like, oh, hey. Okay.
Last week I said yep. I got it off of Tinder. Mm-hmm. So just
call back
there. Yeah. Yeah. Nobody got it. Just
I got it.
Yeah.
We don't remember anything.
I got
seriously,
it. I
what
are you talking about?
Leaves my mind immediately.
Good. I know. what? All right. So story says, so tonight, the weirdest thing in my entire life happened to me. Let me explain. I am a 22-year-old recent college grad from a school in Virginia, currently living in DC. I work 90 plus hours a week between two jobs, because I think that's what it takes to live in DC, mm-hmm. full stop. Mm-hmm. I have a dog, and other than that, I live alone because my boyfriend of almost 3 years still lives a few states away. I dated in college as people do, and most of my dates were inconsequential. Most were from Tinder. I never really did much of anything with these dates. A cute kiss here, a snuggle in a movie there, maybe a makeout session where we both got hot and bothered for a few of them, but nothing more than PG-13. This was mostly my freshman and sophomore year, 2013 to 14. The year
Wait,
of
I'm
my...
sorry. I missed something, I think.
Okay.
So she has a boyfriend?
Currently. She's
oh,
speaking
she does
about her
now. Okay. okay. I was but, like...
And now she's going back to talk about when she was in college.
Got
she
it. I was
went
like,
on a few dates.
You have yeah. a boyfriend of 3 years that lives a couple states away, so you're going on dates? I was so confused. Okay. Proceed. My bad.
While she was in college,
got
she is
it.
No longer in college.
Got it, got
While
it.
She was in college, her early freshman, sophomore mm-hmm. year, she dated a lot. She dated around, mm-hmm. but nothing, not too much hanky-panky, mostly, you know, PG-13, she said. So the year of college before I started dating the man of my dreams, also I was 18 during my sophomore year. So remember that. So she's young. The beginning mm-hmm. of her sophomore year, she's turning
yes.
18. So she's had a very...
I also can't let that slide that you just said hanky-panky.
Okay.
I fucking love that. I don't know why.
Hanky-panky is a very...
I bothered you.
No. And
well, I'm also... What a lot of people don't know is that I'm actually a reincarnated 1950s TV person.
Oh.
That makes sense. Yeah. So just to clarify.
Do you say making whoopee? Is that the next step after hanky-panky?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's when I get out of the black and white television
Ooh.
Era.
Ooh, okay.
And I step into the color era.
Oh.
And then it's making whoopee.
Nice.
All right. Fast forward to November 2017. I get a weird Facebook message from one of my old dates from my sophomore year. Let's call him Harry. Harry messages and says that we need to talk. He needed to call me, and it was an emergency. The police were involved.
What? Oh. I haven't talked to you in how many years?
Block.
lots and lots of years.
The police
lots
will find me years. If they need to
if
talk
they
to me.
If it's really important, they'll reach out.
If it's police involved, they'll find me. Mm-hmm. I flip shit and call him wondering what the fuck is going on. He answers and says the most absurd thing I've ever heard in my entire life. He says, "Where is our son?"
Excuse me?
First off, I never had sex with this man. Second, never, ever, ever had a kid or ever been pregnant. Third, what the fuck?
Where is our son?
So basically, for 15 minutes, I'm screaming back and forth with Harry about how I've never had a kid. I FaceTime this asshat to show him my sad little DC apartment, including my closets and outside my door because someone could be hiding.
Babe, what I'm not going to do is argue with this man on the phone. Block. Well, I'm not going to try and convince you that
we haven't had
a child. I know I've never had a child.
You are if the police are involved, which they actually are.
Well, the police can come talk to me. Look at my medical records.
If somebody gives me that call, I'm thinking you've got me confused with somebody else, maybe a same name, right? And so I'd be like, no, you don't mean me. And no, definitely, I'm not who you think I am. We do not have a kid.
We
didn't even have sex. I finally ask him why the fuck he thinks I had a kid after 4 years of not speaking. And he replies with, "God told me you had my son and you were hurting him."
Oh, well, maybe God got the wrong number.
Are the police in the room? Okay, like, did they hear you say that? Can we just case closed on this?
I then spend 30 minutes on the phone with the police department by my former college to inform them that I did not have a child. I could not harm a child I never had. And oh, by the way, they shouldn't respond lights and sirens to a house that I have no fucking clue where it is. I have to provide my social security number, birthday, and medical history to prove to them that I do not have a child. Finally, after all of this time, the police officer is convinced. He calls off the squad from responding to a random house on campus of my former school and informs me on how to file a restraining order.
Time out. Yeah. Like, I'm glad that they are taking potential child abuse seriously. Like, I am glad that they are taking that seriously. However, he went to the police and said, "God told me that this woman was hurting my child that I hadn't heard about in 4 years." And they were responding lights and sirens to that.
Instead of like,
I feel like he probably didn't say that to them.
Well, what did he say?
He said that to her on the phone. Like, wow. I think he said, "This woman had my child. She took him away and has hurt him, harmed him."
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, a follow up question as a cop, I would be like, "And how do you know this?" Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know that I would follow up with that question. If somebody told me somebody stole my child and they've taken them and they're harming them, I wouldn't be like, "How do you know they have your child?" I don't know. I guess, I don't know. Maybe not.
Well,
that's why I'm not a cop.
Regardless, at least they didn't send a whole fleet of police vehicles to this random person's house.
Can't you imagine? And she's not even living there anymore. So it's just like some probably random dorm room. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Poof, poof, poof. Where's the kid?
Yeah, you're
and
fucking
then,
high.
And then it's the chick with the rubber ducky exactly. and the Sprite on her back.
You're fucking,
what?
Or you're high on Adderall because you've been studying for like 24 hours and there's cops at your door. Now you're freaking the fuck out. Like,
Oh my God. She's like never used Tinder and always used protection.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lord.
Oh my God.
But okay. You see, like, this is why I'm like, y'all got to be careful who you're out here, like, potentially having kids with. Lord.
Oh my goodness.
You never know. People
Where's
are
my son?
Where's my
son? Where's my
I'm going to call you guys randomly and just say that into the phone. Awesome. Where's my son?
It's like a Liam Neeson movie. Jesus Christ.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I never had a son. What are you talking about?
I've never given birth. I think I'd remember if I gave birth.
I mean, my goal is if I ever do get to that point that I won't.
Yeah, knock me out.
All of the drugs, please. Mm-hmm. I would like to forget. But Well, you guys want to take five and then we'll come back with the tainted love?
Yes.
Sounds good.
Cool.
And we're back. Christina.
Okay. I got my story from the mothership, Texas Monthly.
Oh,
perfect.
Amazing.
The mothership.
It really is. And I am actually shocked. There are, as far as I could find, no datelines, 48 hours, no documentary type things on this case. It is bananas to me. But maybe at the end, you'll see why. But I'm going to tell you guys about Walker Rainey. He was born in...
That sounds familiar.
Walker Rainey.
Walker Rainey
okay.
was born in okay. 1947 in Owensburg, Kentucky. He was born to parents who were... his dad was like a steel mill worker, some kind of thing, but he was an alcoholic. His mother was neglectful. So he just really did not have a good childhood. But he spent... The times that were happy in his childhood were when he was in church. Like, he really felt that community. He felt that love. Like, church was, like, a really big thing for him growing up.
Church can be really useful for that, truly. Like, you know? And community. Like, people who you feel like really care about you if you're not getting that at home.
Right. So, yeah, he really gravitated toward the Methodist church. And, like, whenever he would see that preacher preaching and everybody, like, paying attention to him, like, he was like, this is it. This is what I'm going to do when I grow up. So he did. He attended Western Kentucky University and Vanderbilt. And then he came to Dallas, which is like a huge Methodist community. And he went to the Perkins School of Theology at Southern Methodist University. There he met Peggy Nicolai. She was a graduate student of sacred organ music, which I didn't know you can do.
I'm sorry, wait, a what?
Sacred organ music.
You can major in that? Like, all right.
She got a degree?
Yes.
In sacred organ music, not just like organ studies or whatever.
But yes, yeah, she did. And Peggy was like beautiful, demure, very introverted, very shy. And she liked playing the organ. She was like pretty much kind of the perfect like minister's wife.
She liked playing sacred organs.
Sacred organs, yeah. Not other organs.
Put some respect on her name. It's sacred organ music only.
Exactly. Oof. So they were...
I'm kind of mad that that's a degree. I'm not going to lie.
I know. Yeah. You went arms crossed immediately. Yeah, like Cassie had so much face on her face.
It's kind of pissing me off.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Sometimes we just get irrationally upset about things and I feel you and that's okay.
Listen, feminism means everybody gets to
that's
make
right
a
we all have a choice
would,
even if yep. that choice there. Is to get a degree in sacred organ.
Yep.
you're right.
So they were married in 1971. They, as far as we know, had like a good marriage. They had 10 years before they had their first child, which was a son, and their second child, a daughter, was born 2 years later. So Rayleigh actually, like, they had moved to Dallas, and the biggest church for Methodism in Dallas was hiring like a minister, but he's like young, like he's only like 30. They actually hired him at 33, and he became the youngest senior minister of the 6,000 member church.
So he's like batting a thousand, because like Texas is like the New York of of like churches, you know, church places.
Yes, it really is.
If you can make it there, you can make
it
anywhere.
Exactly. And he's at the big time at 33.
He is electric. He ends up like double. He gets like the congregation grows. He's electric. They likened him to a poet, and he had a very peace and justice message, which attracted new members to the church, even as other downtown congregations were in decline. Sundays in Dallas, where churches are everywhere, hundreds of people passed so many churches just to get to his. So he had like those 6,000 members. He ended up like his budget was $2 million.
Mega churches freak me out. Mm-hmm. They freak me out. Did you guys see over Christmas all of the like videos of like mega church Christmas celebrations?
No.
Insane. People are being like floated in on wires. There's like living camels on stage. Oh,
it's like, what in the Garth Brooks is happening?
It's too much.
Here's my thing.
It's too
y'all
much.
Y'all got all that money. Yeah. Y'all can't help your community.
Well, it's like that.
You're going to pay for camels?
That Super Bowl ad.
Oh, my God. Where they spent like $6 million on a Super Bowl ad for
like
Jesus.
I kind of feel like Jesus would rather you like fed poor people.
I think they need to get one of them bracelets.
Yep. WWJD.
Do you remember when everybody had one? Oh, wow.
That one and then the Lance Armstrong
one. Livestrong bracelet.
Yeah. I remember. Oh. So he would spend a considerable amount of time visiting hospitals, preaching funerals, counseling troubled youngsters, running administrative meetings, setting budget goals. It's like a really demanding occupation. And I guess I had never thought about that. You know what I mean? It's not just like you're preaching on Sunday. Like you have a lot of stuff to do if you want to be like a true leader.
I feel like a congregation of this size though, like why doesn't he have a team?
He does. He had a staff of 65 people to assist him.
Holy shit.
But just keeping the staff appeased and like doing things, that's also a full-time job. So he definitely was the kind of person that knew everyone's name. He would like show up to a random person's school play because they were in the congregation. He went above and beyond. And he was really good friends with John Yerington and his wife, Diane. That was like I believe he was like the choir director or whatever. So they were like really good couple friends. But like
another couple has entered the chat. Things are about to get messy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So a recurring theme in his sermons was racism. He was actually extremely anti-racist in the 80s in Dallas, would like preach a very, very progressive message, like that he was challenging his congregation to acknowledge bigotry and poverty around
them. So he did have a WWJD bracelet, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. Like,
and he looked at it every day, reminded him.
And he was like, oh, yeah. But in that environment, you know, it's in 87 that Raley received the first in a series of threatening letters. Known to only a few members of the church, anonymous letters seemed to be the work of a white supremacist angered by Raley's views on civil rights. When five more letters follows, the FBI was brought in to investigate. And on Easter morning, the last of the notes was pushed under the door of the church office. And it said, "Easter is the day when Jesus got up. Well, big man, you're going down."
What?
Which Damn. Is such a weird thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but Raley insisted on going ahead with the sermon, but in a dramatic fashion decides to like do it in a bulletproof vest underneath his vestments. And he was flanked by plainclothes police officers.
I would have worn it on the outside, like 50 Cent.
That's right. Like they want me dead for preaching the truth. But a meeting was held the next day to discuss security for Raley and his family. And they suggested putting in a mobile car phone, which was installed the following morning on Tuesday, April 21st, 1987. On that night at 6:30 in the evening, Raley comes home from work and drove into the family garage. He says he found his wife working on a garage door latch with a bar of soap. The spring on the latch had been sticking and Peggy was trying to lubricate it.
Is that like an old school, like is that something they would have taught me in home ec?
Probably. Yeah. Okay. That's something I don't know about that home ec, we didn't but learn. Yes. I was in this. Religion.
Vintage WD-40.
There you go. According to Raley, he sat on the hood of her Chrysler for a few minutes talking to her, and she and the children had already eaten dinner. Oh, he wasn't,
I know the story.
He wasn't hungry, so the two of them shared a glass of wine. He then left, still in his business suit, ostensibly to spend the evening at the SMU libraries to write footnotes for the book he was writing. Now at 6:38, he called the time from his car phone. Everyone knew he didn't wear a watch. So this was like common.
Oh yeah.
Common.
Do you remember
thing?
When you yeah. could do that, when you could call like for time yes. and weather?
Yeah. Weather and time yeah. and weather. Yeah.
Wow. That's so weird. Yeah. You used to be able right? to do that.
Hmm. Well, it's before you like could just common. Ask Siri. Now, literally, I will ask Siri if it's raining. Like, rather than, like, go look.
Same. I've done that. I've done Same. That.
I have, too. Yeah. Definitely have asked Alexa to tell mm-hmm. me.
So, Rayleigh says he spent the next 30 minutes at the library at the theology school searching for a biography of Ann Sullivan, Helen Keller's teacher. Mm-hmm. At 7:26, he's back in his car, calling a family friend who was going to babysit for his kids while him and Peggy took like a trip to San Antonio for the weekend. And it was like a romantic trip. It was like the first time going away together, just the two of them for a while. So I know that was something that they were looking forward to. Now at 7:32, he called Lucy Papillon, French for butterfly.
Papillon.
Yes.
Papillon.
Papillon.
Also and a very cute dog.
Then Papillon. Drove to her house where he stayed for about 40 minutes. He says he went there to get some relaxation tapes to help relieve his stress.
Mm. For 40 minutes.
Yes. And Lucy Papillon was the fashion model turned clinical psychologist daughter of the former head minister, Bob Goodrich. She had recently moved back to Dallas, and at 45, she was still banging and had recently changed her last name to Papillon because she said, the caterpillars crawling around feels like the world's okay, but if they really want to fly, they've got to go through the darkest thing they've ever seen, which is the cocoon. Oh,
I am not getting any kind of clinical psychology from this woman. I'll tell you that right now. Bit. We are not going to vibe. I know it.
Mm-hmm.
No.
So after he gets his relaxation.
Uh-huh. I bet tapes. He does.
A librarian at Bridwell remembers seeing him sometime after 8 when he asked what time the library closed. At 8:30, he calls Peggy from a payphone, and she told him she was putting the children to bed. After that, she talked to her parents until around 9:14. Meanwhile, Rayleigh left the library. He purchased gas at a Texaco station at 8:53 and also bought a wine cooler, which he says accounts for the fact that police would later report him as intoxicated when they came to his house 4 hours later.
One wine cooler? It's not like he was chugging Carlo Rossi. He had one wine cooler.
Ah, wine cooler. Yes.
Sure.
At 9:30, a jogger saw a man in a business suit running through a yard 2 streets away from the Rayleigh's house. Between 10:15 and 10:30, a neighbor heard rustling noises. So Rayleigh said he had gone to that gas station because he was thirsty and had returned to his research in the main library. So the other thing that's weird is that at midnight, Rayleigh attempted to give his business card to a student at the checkout desk. On the back of the card was a message asking for help to finding the Sullivan biography. He was like, can you give this to the research librarian? And he had written the time, which he noted to be 10:30. So not midnight. Mm-hmm. He was like, 10:30 right now, I'm asking for this
also,
book.
Why did he write the time down?
After leaving the library.
So he had an alibi?
Yeah, that's weird behavior. Like, so people try so hard. Yeah. To like make themselves look innocent, that I'm like, you're making yourself look more suspicious. Who does that?
Yeah.
Also, his timeline is very tight. Like he's got like a real, he knows exactly where he was all the time.
Right. At very like precise. Yeah.
Yeah.
So after leaving the library, Rayleigh phoned his home from the car, but this time he called not his main line, or the private line to his house, which would ring. The main line to his house was just connected to an answering machine. So it wouldn't ring. It would just take messages. So he calls that. This is like after midnight. He calls and says, I don't have the have my watch on, which of course he does. Everyone knows he never does.
Right.
But it's about 10:30 or 10:45, which records show that the call is actually made 3 minutes after midnight. If you want to, go ahead and lock the garage door and I'll park out front.
Also, again, so he left a voicemail.
Like he left a voicemail.
What? When in the history of ever have you called someone to leave a voicemail and you say, it's what 15 it after nine?
Yeah.
Like, when?
Why? You establishing?
It's weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And about a half hour later, he called his answering machine again, giving the correct time and saying he was on his way home. So 11 minutes after the second call, Rayleigh drove into the driveway and found the garage door partly open. Mm-hmm. The garage was dark. The bulbs had been removed from the overhead light. Rayleigh said he left his headlights on and got out of the car, and he found Peggy lying behind her car, writhing in convulsions. Her face was hugely swollen and discolored, yet her hair was scarcely messed up and her glasses were in place. At 12:43, police received a call from Rayleigh who said, I just came into my house and my wife's in the garage. Somebody has done something to her. The dispatcher asked, has she been beat up or what? I don't know, he replied. She's foaming at the mouth or something. So he calls them. They're on their way. And then he immediately calls his good friends, John and Diane Yerington. He's like, Diane, something's happened to Peggy. Come quick. The other thing that some articles talk about that I was reading was that her son, who is five at the time, Ryan, was there in the garage as well.
Oh, that's awful. And five is old enough to start forming like real memories.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So Diane and John come and get the kids and Peggy is rushed to the hospital. She is alive, but once they finally get her like into the ICU and everything, they have to induce her into a coma. Her brain is so swollen, and don't know if she'll come out of this coma. So he's like, John, Diane, can you keep the kids? I'm going to stay here at the hospital. Like, the police basically get that timeline that I just shared with you out of him. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, all right. Like, the whole city freaks the fuck out because they believe that a white supremacist came and hurt the fucking wife of the this man who's been preaching, like, such great messaging of love and acceptance and everything. So Dallas is, like, freaking out. Well, it's been like a few days and they are like, this is one of the first, like he had a mobile phone in 87. This is like early tech. And they're able to actually like look at phone records and they're like, there's some like weird shit here. Like, why does it look like he's trying to establish an alibi? Like he's seen at the library at 8. He's seen at the library at midnight. And then there's all this shit in between. And also Lucy, what are those relaxation tapes you're talking about? Well, they find out, like, apparently he's been boinking Lucy.
No way.
I know.
I'm so surprised.
I can't believe
that. I did not see that coming.
So, you know, it's been 9 days since the crime, and they're like, hey, just so you know, we've got some questions about your timeline and everything. Like, we're going to come and interview you. So when they get to his suite, the door has been locked. They have to break it in. He has downed an entire bottle of pills and written a suicide note.
Oh.
Sorry. Content warning. He's written a note to basically saying, like, the demons have made me do it. Or something really vague, basically talking about demons. And so he's in a coma now. So both Peggy and
Jesus
Walker.
And they have kids.
And they have kids are in a coma in the same hospital. He ends up waking up 5 days later. And police are like, yeah, we definitely think it's you. But all they have is like circumstantial stuff. They don't evidence, they don't really yeah. have anything. So he's like, I'm not going to talk to police anymore. They think I'm a suspect. Meanwhile, all of Dallas, since the suicide attempt, are like, oh, yeah. And the news of his affair, everyone's like, yeah. oh, no, he it wasn't it. Racist. It was you.
Yeah, listen, like, yeah. That's the other thing. Dallas, Texas, they love their churches and they love gossip. That's what I know. So mm-hmm. there's no way you're getting away with something like that in Dallas.
Exactly. No. So he's like, he knows he's under suspicion and he doesn't talk to cops. He does not talk to cops. He keeps his mouth shut, but he'll talk to any fucking reporter. So he talks mm-hmm. to a lot of reporters and everything like that. Time goes on. Meanwhile, John and Diane still have the kids. And he's like, you know what? Actually, you can keep
you
them
just
kids.
Keep those.
You can keep you them keep kids. Them.
Wow.
No.
No
can
me
you
gusta.
Imagine.
And
okay, so maybe he wasn't really prescribing to that WWJD as much as I thought.
Right. Right. No. Exactly. No, he so he's like, keep them kids and also Lucy, let's go to California. So he turns up in Los Angeles, California, gets himself a nice cush job at another Methodist church.
Wow.
And it is 5 years later, did
they not know about his past? I just short-circuited for a second.
He's just like, you know, this happened to me. This happened to me. And I'm just trying to move on with my life.
One quick question. Where are your kids?
Jesus said,
one quick question.
Forget.
Where are them kids at?
Where are them kids?
I feel like
they're being taken care of, you know?
God.
It's all good.
Imagine. You imagine you're just like, hey, we're going to take care of your kids while this thing is going on. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. I now have, how
now
many were two
kids.
Or three?
Two. Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Two kids. Five and two. And
I mean,
the point
them's your kids now because
right.
what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You're going to take care of them kids.
Diane had taken Ryan to the hospital the day after the attack because they noticed like broken blood vessels in his face and his eyes. And
that's a choking
a handprint yeah.
oh,
around his
my
neck.
God.
And the doctor
yeah, they're
told,
better off.
The doctor told her whoever did this to Peggy, something also happened to Ryan.
Oh.
And what they were able to get out of him when it happened was a man in a black ski mask. A bad man did this to my mom. Later he would clarify in very like this is 5 years later, so he's 10 now. He would say, "No, it was my dad. My dad did this and told me to say it was a bad man." Mm-hmm. Now, 5 years later, they're finally been like, because the whole city is like, "He fucking did it. Like, charge him." Because Peggy right. is still laying in a vegetative state. She
no.
is completely like, just like brain, no brain activity.
Wow.
5 years later. And, you know, her family is obviously like, he needs to be brought to justice, like that kind of thing. So 5 years later, the district attorney appoints two attorneys to prosecute the case who fucking hate each other and won't speak to each other.
What?
Are
they, get over
what, are
it.
They divorcing?
Grow up.
Exactly. Yeah. So they present the case. They don't present any of the testimony from Ryan.
Right.
They present all the circumstantial stuff. They basically botch the case, and he is acquitted in 1993
of
the attempted murder
of Peggy.
Oh, that's
awful. Wow.
So it would go on that he would move back to California, still without them kids, and he would get remarried. Him and Lucy broke up. Like, Lucy testified at the trial, was, like, not
having
it.
Was it built to last? Wow.
Really?
It's weird.
You don't say.
It's weird.
But, yeah, he got married again. Peggy actually lived, as in quotes, until 2011. So 24 years. She lived in a hospital that her parents would visit every day and brush her hair and stay with her until they finally had to go into a nursing home that was right down the street. And then her brother would take them to visit her every day until their death. And yeah, she never got to see her kids again. Peggy's mother and Diane had spoken, and because the kids were 5 and 2, and considering the state of Peggy, they thought it would be too traumatizing. Ryan and Megan did not see their father again. In fact, did not want to see their father again.
Yeah.
Dropped their last name and took the Yarrington last name.
Oh, good for them.
That's as happy an ending as you can think for those kids. Yeah. Honestly.
Exactly. But yeah, to this day, Walker Rainey is Dr. Walker Rainey.
Oh, shut
is
up.
Still residing here in Los Angeles, California.
If I see him, it is on site. I don't care how old he is. How old is he? He was born in 1940.
47. So yeah. There you go. And I believe he is working for a church. So that is the tainted love story of the preacher. Walker Rainey. And I cannot believe that hasn't been a documentary. And I have to think that
Netflix
it's because
series.
He was acquitted. He was acquitted. And when she died, there were a lot of people who asked, like, oh, can't you try him now for the murder? But it's basically, they can't because of double jeopardy. It's basically
But that was
same.
Attempted murder
Correct.
Is what they charged him but for. So they can't.
It's the same evidence that they're going to use. I was confused, Got too, because I thought it would be like a different charge. But they said
but
no.
With new, but it, they would need new evidence then, I guess. To
Wow.
Rough.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
Justice for Peggy, guys.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, man. What a fucking story. That's a wild one.
Yeah, I know. At first I was like, you know, because I'm like reading it. And the Texas Monthly article that I read was fucking incredible.
They always are. They're so good.
So good. Because he tied it into... The actual author like had a real issue with the Methodist faith. Like he had grown up in, he went to that church growing up.
Oh,
like so,
wow.
It really
Personal
just had
connection.
Like,
yeah,
you know, a lot of that in there where he's just like, you know, tying it into like some of the hypocrisy that he felt was inherent in that church. So it's a really, really good read. I definitely recommend it. And sources will. Be available on our website.
Yeah.
If you want to.
Wow.
Ooh wee.
Yep.
Oof. Well, what are you guys watching?
Well, speaking of the Texas Monthly article, I watched the Netflix limited series, The Texas Killing Fields.
Oh. Whoa.
And they interview Skip
Hollinsworth.
Yes, who had like written articles about that.
We love Skip over here.
We love Skip. Gotta love Skip. yeah, I mean, and it was good. It's like, I don't know. It's always such a bummer whenever you're interviewing like family members and people who like they interview one father who is like pretty instrumental in keeping the case moving forward because he just never let up.
Right.
Which is amazing, but it's also so sad because it's just like he talks about how his, you know, he's like, when do you quit? Do you ever quit? Like, this was my daughter.
Right.
Yeah.
And, but it's taken his whole life from him basically because he can't really do anything else except for. Try and get justice for his daughter. But yeah. I enjoyed it. It was good. Enjoyed it in quotes as much as you can enjoy anything like that.
Right.
What about you, Cass?
I just started watching Alexander on Netflix, like an episode and a half in.
Oh, yeah. I checked that out too. I was like, okay.
That's kind of where I'm at. Like, meh, it's fine. We'll see. I did fall asleep. I'm not saying.
I started watching I'm 2 episodes into The Octopus Murders.
I've been very curious about that. That keeps coming up on my,
Wild. It's wild. It's wild to the point where I'm like, is this fake? Am I being punked? I have resisted the urge to look up like if it's fake or not, because if it's not fake, this is a wild story.
Oh, all right. I'm sold. I'm about to watch it.
Okay.
Like this wild conspiracy kind of thing. Don't spoil it for me and let me know if it's fake or not. It's good enough and I'm intrigued enough that I'm going to watch it all the way through and then do my
and
research.
Then
but yeah,
like,
so far
when you
I'm like,
say,
what?
Is it fake? Are you saying that you think it might be like a mockumentary?
Yeah.
Like, it's bananas?
It's almost, yeah, it's that bananas. Wow. And I'm like, also, how do they have all this B-roll footage? Because it's so put together that I'm just like, Is this fake?
I love it that we trust nothing and no one knows.
I don't trust no
never
bitch.
Not since
anymore.
No, never since not since Blair Witch trust.
No,
someone.
Exactly.
Yeah, they
exactly.
ruined us. Yeah.
You can't trust anything. So yeah, if you guys have something that we should watch, if you have a terrible date story, if you just want to reach out and say hello, go to our one-stop shop of a website. It's mywordstatepodcast.com. And we love you so much.
Cheers.